University, with production support from the Brabson Foundation. Today's program was prepared by Eric Sonstrom, with help from Mary Abernathy at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. I'm Yael Cassander.
In sports, free agent catcher Paul Bacco and the Chicago Cubs today agreed to a one-year contract worth $725,000. Bacco played for the Cubs in 2003-2004, helping them win the NL Central and reach the NL Championship Series during his first season in Chicago. The 36-year-old spent last year with Cincinnati. Top-ranked Rafael Nadal will take on number 2 Roger Federer in Sunday's final at the Australian Open. Meanwhile, Serena and Venus Williams captured the women's doubles crown today. Dominique Keller came off the bench and led number 19 Illinois with 9 points, but he says he's embarrassed by the Illini's 59-36 loss to Minnesota last night. Keller says Illinois' players just couldn't hit their shots and let the offense dictate the game instead of letting the defense do it. The men host Iowa on Sunday. Meanwhile, the Illinois women scored a victory over Northwestern in Evanston last night, 45-44. The women are in action next week when they host Michigan State. That game is set for Thursday, February 5th. The Chicago Bulls haven't won in Sacramento since Michael Jordan led them to their 6th NBA title. Tonight, the Bulls will try for their first victory over the Kings in Sacramento in 11 years. Chicago has only won 6 of its last 19 games. And the Blackhawks, they are off today before continuing their 8-game road trip with a stop in San Jose. The Hawks beat Anaheim 3-2 on Wednesday before losing 5-2 to the Los Angeles Kings last night. That's sports.
It starts as a dream deep in the heart of a young musician. After endless hours of practice, nerve-wracking auditions, and an unshakable resolve to succeed, the dream begins to blossom. Until now, at the peak of their profession, two orchestras are poised to reach the pinnacle. It's the Symphony Bowl, coming soon to this station.
Actually, the Symphony Bowl comes to our companion station, the classical one, FM 90.9, this afternoon, following the 4 o'clock newscast. Humorous and packed with music, Symphony Bowl will put you on the 50-yard line for all the action. In addition to authentic recordings from each organization, they'll feature celebrity cameos and interviews. Special guests include Detroit Symphony Music Director and Principal Guest Conductor for the Pittsburgh Symphony, Leonard Slatkin, violinist Hilary Hahn, composer Marvin Hamlisch, and Denise Graves. Host Chris Felsen will do play-by-play with color analysis by Joan McFarland and sideline reports from Jimmy Rhodes. That's the Symphony Bowl this afternoon on our companion station, 90.9, at 4:06.
Today's broadcast is funded in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, a state agency.
Artists and educators say they're hopeful the Obama administration will usher in a new era for the arts. Mr. Obama is thought to be the first president with a full arts platform and a national arts policy committee in place before the election. That public commitment has some groups in Chicago feeling hopeful that there will be more money for the arts, even in hard times. Lynette Kalsnes reports.
I remember SWAT cats.
Students are hunched over square tables, drawing as many cartoon characters as they can think of.
Everybody doing okay?
Yeah.
Are you having trouble coming up with more than like 5 or 6 or 7?
Teaching artist Jeremy Tinder's leading a class at the nonprofit Marwin Art Center. It's the first day, and one of his students is stuck. He's drawn only one cartoon character.
The idea is to draw things that are outside of your comfort zone, you know? You know enough about comics to know that it's not if you can draw well or if you think you draw poorly, it's how you use what talents you have.
Arts educators and artists are hoping that scenes like this will become more common around here and around the nation under the new administration. Mr. Obama's platform includes expanding partnerships between schools and art organizations and creating an artist corps to work in low-income schools. Mr. Obama also pledged to put more money into the National Endowment for the Arts, provide health care to artists, and streamline the visa process to attract foreign talent. Paul Jaskett is an art history professor at DePaul University, and he heads the College Art Association. He's already sent a letter to the president pushing the group's priorities.
We're hoping to join the very broad chorus of nonprofits, large and small, that are pushing the administration to stick to its goals of keeping the arts as central to American culture and society.
Many groups are already holding the president's feet to the fire, especially art educators. What they're counting on most is how the new administration might change schools. The head of Marwin, Antonia Contro, calls this a renaissance.
We will see arts instruction restored. There will be arts instruction in the schools. I think we'll see art specialists being hired to teach art rather than classroom teachers. As a result, the quality, the rigor of the instruction will be better.
Okay, students.
Over at the University of Illinois at Chicago, Professor Olivia Goody is teaching the next generation of art teachers. On this day, the discussion turns to the new president. Now, it's not in the arts platform, but Goody says one thing that would help is reforming No Child Left Behind.
Principals became very fearful, and it created this, just like this icy grip on the idea of curriculum innovation.
One of her students, junior Emily Grelk, is excited about Mr. Obama's pledge to champion arts education.
I'm hoping that it'll get kids and parents more excited about their children being in art classes. And I'm just hoping that everyone will be more open to learning about different cultures and not like the regular like Picasso and all the other like, you know, white male artists that we've always learned about ever since I was little.
It's not just what kids learn in the classroom. It's about how artists can survive in this scary economy. The platform would put some people to work through an artist corps that would send artists into low-income schools and communities. It also would let artists get health care under a new national system Mr. Obama has vowed to create. That's the pledge that hit Barbara DeGeneveve the hardest.
I cried when I read it.
She's chair of the photography department at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago.
Everyone needs health care, but artists are, for the most part, fairly poor because most artists don't care about anything but making art. So they will give up so much to make their work. And what they give up very often is health care.
The tax code's another issue Mr. Obama's vowed to change. A twist in the code lets private collectors donate to museums and deduct the fair market value, but not artists. Madeline Grinstein, director of the Museum of Contemporary Art, says there are famous artists who want to donate but can't afford to.
Right now, if an artist were to donate a work of art, a painting, to a museum, they would get the tax deduction only for the value of the materials that they put into that artwork. In other words, they would get a tax deduction of maybe $10.
If the code changes, she envisions new works arriving at museums all over the country. Now, there's no mention of emergency bailout funds or an art czar in the platform, but Grinstein supports both.
It's not just car industries that may be in trouble or banks, but there are many cultural institutions that need representation and that need economic assistance, and they don't have somebody to go to discuss that.
I think for those of us in the visual arts that have experienced the last few decades, we are seeing a profound opportunity as well as a profound crisis.
DePaul's Paul Jaskett says the magic question is whether there's enough money to fund the platform or provide emergency bailouts. He says the arts are a necessity, but they're seen as a luxury even in the best of times. Now, they're up against massive job losses and failing banks. Still, he and other educators are hopeful Mr. Obama will put the arts on an equal footing and prevent people from literally becoming starving artists. Lynette Kalsness.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. It's 2:49 Central Time, 20 degrees in Urbana. The The Champaign-Urbana Chorus Amasong from their recording The Power of Song. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. This evening at 9 o'clock on our companion station, WILL-TV, you can see a documentary about Amasong. The film, The Amasong Chorus Singing Out, will air at 9 p.m. My guest in this portion of the program is University of Illinois journalism professor Jay Rosenstein. He produced and directed the film, which is a co-production of WILL-TV and the Independent Television Service. The 2003 documentary was originally broadcast by PBS as part of the Independent Lens series. For tonight's broadcast on WILL-TV, Jay has revised the film. Thanks for joining us, Jay.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Sure, my pleasure. Well, tell us something about this group. What would you like our listeners to know about Amasong?
Oh, boy, you put me on the spot. I don't know what kind of words I can come up with to really describe their music, but obviously I think their music is great. I also think that there's something special about the group in addition to its music. Certainly its history and its formation make a very compelling sort of social story. And I tried to do my best to tell that in the original documentary.
Yeah. What led you to Amasong, and when did you say, boy, I want to make a film about these women?
Well, what led me to Amasong was I was a listener, and I had been going to the concerts for a couple of years, and I knew Christina Berger, who's the founding director. I didn't know her well, but I knew her a little bit. And the irony is, I actually always hated choral music. In fact, I used to work as a recording engineer at the School of Music, and I had to record choral concerts. I used to fall asleep in the control room. But going to Amasong concerts, there seemed to be something different. And one of the differences was the way in which Christina was combining social activism with great music. It took me a while, but it's some point the light bulb went on, and I thought I ought to do a film about this.
Yeah. Now, Amasong has billed itself as Champaign-Urbana's premier lesbian feminist chorus. So here we get a real hit of the social activism. But how does it come through in a performance?
I'm sorry. I couldn't hear the rest of your question. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you're cutting out a little, too. We're not having the greatest phone connection here this afternoon. The group, Amasong, bills itself as Champaign-Urbana's premier lesbian feminist chorus, or feminist lesbian chorus. I can't remember what the order is there. Forgive me for that. But so there we have a real sense of this group is saying something in how it bills itself. But how does that kind of idea of social activism come through in a performance?
Well, that's interesting, but it comes through in certainly the music that Christina used to select, and I'm sure Megan, the new director, and feels the same way. Part of it is in the music they selected. Part of it had to do with the stories behind the music, and also the service, actually, that Amasong used to do for the community, which is outside of a traditional concert.
Mm. So what's the occasion for showing the film tonight on WILL-TV, and what led to you kind of taking another look at it, and you've done a little reworking?
Yes. It's very rare that you sort of get a chance to go back and fix some of the things that used to bother you about a previous work. But Amasong has a new CD out, which I know you talked about on your program.
Right.
And so David Teal, the program director at WILL-TV, just contacted me and asked if he could show the program again. And immediately I thought, oh, this is a wonderful opportunity again for me to fix some things that had been bugging me for a long time. I jumped on that opportunity.
Yeah. So they have a new recording out, their fourth. You want to do a little promotional announcement for them here, and you, I'm sure you own it.
I'm embarrassed to say on the air that I don't have it.
So, well, it's only been out for like about 15 minutes, but yeah.
So, yes, I'm embarrassed to say I don't have it. So I'm not the one who could give you a good promotion of that. But certainly if you watch the film tonight, and one of the goals of the film was always to direct people to the music. And through learning the story of Amasong, I knew it would interest other people in finding out more about their music. And so obviously you could go online and look up Amasong on the web, and you'll find all the information you need about their music.
Okay. Jay, thank you for talking with me this afternoon.
Sure. Thanks, Celeste. I appreciate it.
Sure. My pleasure. Jay Rosenstein, University of Illinois journalism professor. He produced and directed the film, The Amasong Chorus, Singing Out. It will be shown tonight on WILL-TV at 9 o'clock.
Earth and Sky.
Friday, January 30th, 2009. If your sky is clear after sunset tonight, you can't miss the blazing planet Venus in the western twilight.
And you'll also find the waxing crescent moon nearby. Venus is the brightest point of light visible in Earth's sky.
With binoculars or even with the eye alone, you might spot the soft glow of Earthshine on the darkened portion of tonight's crescent moon. Earthshine is sunlight that's reflected from Earth back to the moon. As seen from Earth this evening, the moon is about 20% illuminated by sunlight and 80% in shadow. But as seen from the moon, it's opposite. Earth is 80% illuminated and 20% in shadow.
If you look at Venus through a telescope this evening, you'll see that it's also less than full. Venus is about 40% illuminated by sunlight as seen from Earth now. Unlike the moon, which is now waxing or increasing toward full, Venus is waning. The crescent of Venus, visible through telescopes, will shrink throughout February and March. Paradoxically, as its phase decreases, Venus will brighten in Earth's sky over the coming weeks.
That's because Venus is sweeping up behind Earth in orbit right now. It's coming closer to Earth, so its larger disk size will more than make up for its shrinking crescent. I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Joel Block for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
On February 9th, we hope to encourage 400 listeners to invest in WILL. Your dollars will help AM 580 build a better picture of what's going on in your world and how it will affect you. Hi, I'm Station Manager Jay Pierce, asking you to call in with a pledge on February 9th, our one-day Monday fund drive, or give online now at willpledge.org. Thank you.
You're tuned to the Information Advantage. My name is Celeste Gwynn, our technical director. This afternoon in this hour of the program is Jason Croft. Let's take a look at Mike Sola's forecast for Illinois and Indiana. Some chance that we might see the moon tonight and Venus, partly to mostly cloudy across the two states. A few flurries are possible in northern and eastern Indiana. Lows ranging from 2 in eastern Indiana to near 25 in southwestern Illinois. Tomorrow, Saturday, partly to mostly sunny. Highs ranging from 26 in northeastern Indiana to 45 in southwestern Illinois. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy, the low 10.